Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
All right, you've made it back into the House Mystery. And now joining us, as we were talking about before, is the author of the new book, The Best New True Crime Stories, Serial Killers, Mitzi Soretto. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm actually the editor, but I'm also one of the authors in the book. So it's my baby, but I didn't write the whole thing.
It's your baby. So tell us about this. So you're the editor. So you basically have put together all the stories. How did you get on to doing this book, and what made you do this book?
Well, I've edited a lot of anthologies over the year and in various genres, and I've done crime before, but I've done it in a fictional capacity. And I was just actually brainstorming on the phone with a publisher who I actually used to work with at another publishing house, and we were just talking about true crime, and obviously it's hot, which could be good and bad, because then, people tend to turn out a lot of content that may not be that high level. But, I said, yeah, I'd be up for, giving it a go and doing some true crime. And that's really how it came about.
Hmm. So how did you choose who you were going to put in the book? Like, who was going to contribute to the book? Is there a method to this?
A method to my madness, you mean?
Yeah.
I disseminate my calls for submissions quite widely. I reach out all over the place to organizations, writers, et cetera. And for this book, I sort of did it half and half. I contacted some writers specifically who I knew or knew of or have worked with in the past, and then I left the rest to chance, and it just really came together well. I mean, I'm just so pleased with the finished product. I'm so pleased with the stories and the quality of the book, and that's actually the first time I've reached out to so many people personally to be in the book. Normally I just, maybe I might ask one person or two at the most, but this, as I said, this was my debut true crime book, and I kind of wanted to have a little safety net, as it were.
Yeah. And here I thought I was special.
You are special.
I was going to say, you've got some good names, Lee Mahler and some of these names, and all of a sudden you got Mike Brown. Like, my
yeah,
God,
who's that
must
guy?
Have had to fill some
stuff. Yeah, where do you come from? Yeah.
You needed some filler.
It must be those bullet holes in my window. That's what it was, why I had to put Mike in the book.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
So, you know.
No, it was just now, was there? Were you looking for specific topics, like certain serial killers that you wanted to talk about, like you say Ted Bundy and Dahmer and stuff like that? Did you have a list of these killers and then look for people that would contribute on those killers, or was it just you were going to the contributor and then taking what they would want to write?
It was the latter. I did not have specific people in mind other than the one that I chose to write for my own story. I didn't really want Bundy and Dahmer, and they're not in the book. I do reference them in the introduction, but I mean, I think, you know, there's just so much on Bundy already that we're Bundied out. I was interested in getting some cases that maybe are not so known to people. And as I usually do with my books, I like a really international group of people and an international bunch of content. That's what my sole purpose was. And it really worked out, because there's some, you know, I mean, we've hit pretty much every corner of the globe with the subjects in this book, and writers as well from every corner of the globe.
So what was the story that you wrote about? Like, what was it that you contributed?
I wrote a piece called The Monster of Kichevo, and it's about a Macedonian serial killer, and Vlado Tenesky, and he was a journalist. And he started to write about a serial killer in his small city that he lived in, and there was a modus operandi. It was all much older women. They were all like cleaning women, motherly types, not particularly educated, and they all seemed to live in the same neighborhood where Vlado Tenesky lived, and he actually knew these people himself. And he sort of became the main guy reporting about this serial killer case. But, you know, as I go through this story and provide information and evidence from all corners, it's never really been confirmed that he was the killer. And since he's dead, obviously, it's sort of a done deal as far as really knowing for sure. I mean, it's assumed he was, but I do leave that question open.
Yeah, it's got to be tough when you do like something like that, a case something like that. How long does it take you to do a story like that?
You know, I'll tell you, nonfiction is hard work. I mean, writing is hard work, but nonfiction I find particularly hair-raising, because it's just, there's just so much, you know, the research, the cross-checking of research. I mean, you could find information, but you need to make sure that information's correct. So, you know, there's a lot of time spent looking up different things and making sure what you have is accurate. I worked quite a bit on my story. The book itself was quite time-consuming, but I had a specific deadline, so I worked long hours to get it done, and I worked a lot of hours on my story. I do actually have an undergraduate degree in journalism, so this kind of really did work for me. I kind of brought that back into play again, working in true crime.
Yeah, does that concern you now because of the way the internet has really blown up? That there's a lot of things out there and stories that aren't necessarily true, and it's harder to get good evidence, especially if you don't, you know, search it out yourself.
Yeah. I mean, even on Tenesky, there was just things that, I definitely was checking into that. Everybody can have a blog, and everybody can, you know, post stuff, And I mean, even you have that issue with Wikipedia. There's not necessarily fact-based everything on there either. I remember in journalism school when they said, you know, to research pieces, they said, please don't cite Wikipedia. And even, you know, in just general university education, they say, you know, don't use that as your sole source of research for a paper. So, you know, multiply that 100 times or 1,000 times by all the true crime bloggers and just people who are really interested in it, putting information out, and it's like the Chinese whispers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We found that, actually, and a lot of times we've come across some writers that way, too, that really base all their information off of that, you know, off of a TV show, you know?
you could get stuff from TV, but there are some, you know, TV, but, you know, of course with TV, there's so much dramatization, and even something supposedly nonfiction has been heavily dramatized.
Oh, totally. I even one of the books I wrote, I did a show on Oxygen, and they changed a lot of it, and not necessarily for the better. It was more about what was going to keep people entertained, you know.
Yeah. You know. Exactly. Exactly.
So, you can't. I always say you got to get two sources for everything.
As many sources you can ring out, and I'm kind of OCD on that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm working on something right now for my next book, and I mean the amount of sources that I have is taking up two pages of you know, Word document to, you know, where I'm finding my information and checking things out. It's crazy. And of course, if it's an obscure case, that makes it really tough.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, on something where people are already passed, how do you determine, like, when you get different sources, because you can have one person that's thought of as a criminal, and you can talk to 10 people about that person and get 10 total different perspectives. So when they're dead and you can't talk to them, how is it you put that... Like, how do you decide which perspective you're going to take?
For me, I try to provide a really well-rounded perspective and perspective from several different people or sources because, you know, I don't think it's really fair just to use one and then paint someone in a certain light when there could be other things. I mean, obviously with serial killers, I'm not saying these are wonderful guys and ladies in here, but, you know, there's different things going on, and I try to provide that information so there's some understanding of you know, who these people are, perhaps what made them do this, what other circumstances were going on in their lives, and, you know, repercussions, cultural, the effect on culture and society by their acts, that sort of thing. So something really well-rounded. And I think, you know, in journalism school, that's what I was taught to do, and that's really how I'm approaching this.
Yeah, I agree totally. I'm from that background myself. Who are some of your favorite writers or people that have influenced you? Of course, there's me. I know I'm probably your most favorite, but
help.
Besides me, no.
What a sledgehammer hint that was.
No, who would really influence you, like as a crime writer?
You know, it's really hard to say because I was not a huge reader of true crime. But the odd thing was is I actually recently wrote an essay called "Is True Crime Bad for You?" That is over at the Strand magazine. And I hadn't really thought that much about true crime or thought I was particularly interested in true crime. And then it occurred to me that I'd actually been consuming true crime from an early age, you know, watching a lot of those news magazine shows on TV, docudramas, that sort of thing. And, you know, they're primarily true crime stories. So I think that's something that was sitting on my shoulder all these years, and I didn't even realize it until recently.
Hmm. So nothing really your favorite...
Well, actually, I mean, of course, you know, one of the books I read was Ann Rule's book on Bundy, because, I mean, that's just such an amazing book. The fact that she's tasked to write this book about a serial killer, not even realizing that the guy sitting in the office with her is the person who everyone's looking for. So, I mean, that is totally, what are the odds of that?
Great odds.
Now, well, maybe in your life.
Yeah, nowadays. And
yeah, that's true.
Well, what's your opinion on that then? Like when you say, is true crime good for you? Do you think it has a good influence on us as a society?
I
was going to say, ahead. Put this in context, and being where you live, I know you're in Canada and the U.S. probably a fair bit. There's two different angles there, because in the U.S. you've got wide open. Everyone's true crime, you know, there's so many shows, there's so much on the news, Nancy Grace sort of things going on. And in Canada, it's a lot more reserved. You don't hear near as much opinion about the crimes as you do in the U.S. So, you know, so from the two different angles, do you think it's good being so open as the U.S.?
You know, the one issue with the U.S. is there's always that, this trying to put an entertainment spin on it is a bit disturbing. I think, you know, for what I try to do is be more informational, giving people some perspective and some knowledge about what's behind all of this. And I think the analysis is something that we need to see more of. Sensationalism, I don't think, is really suitable, and some true crime is sensationalist, and that's something I definitely ran a mile from and did not want to have in my book. But, you know, the U.S. is the U.S., and everything's always inflated 10 million times, and that's just the way it's been, and I doubt that's going to change.
Yeah, I try to do the same thing on my podcast. We are focused on the victim and the people around the crime to try and determine, you know, what made this person tick, what happened afterward, how do people feel about these things. Those are things that kind of get lost in the quote-unquote murder porn world.
Oh,
actually, that's exactly it. Murder porn. I mean, that is something that I don't really think that's good. And in my piece that I wrote, I had kind of referenced that. I mean, but you know, true crime is educational. You know, it's a learning experience. One of the reasons I mentioned that women are big consumers of true crime, and a lot of them actually find this informative, because it's sort of like a bit of a warning story, things that maybe they should be aware of, look out for. So it's educational in that regard as well. And let's face it, people are fascinated by this content. I mean, this is the darkest part of people's lives, especially serial killers. This is pretty dark stuff. And most of us can't really even conceive of this. So, of course, there's a fascination to try to understand what makes these people tick.
I just wonder, but when a person gets into a certain industry, like a person becomes a policeman or a person becomes loss prevention in a store, and they start doing something for a number of years, they start to look at all people as what they're doing wrong. They're looking for something. Does that make sense? Like, and so if you're totally obsessed in true crime, are you not going to start looking at your neighbors like, oh, I wonder if, you know, she's missing. I haven't seen her for 2 days. Did he kill her? You know, and does it start to make us a little bit more paranoid?
You know, it could, but then on the other hand, maybe that person who hasn't been seen in a couple of days, there's a reason why they haven't been seen, and maybe people do need to kind of be aware of what's going on around them. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword, really.
Yeah, so Mike, where is Carol?
She's at work.
Oh, sure. So now, and it's, put it to Mike there for a sec. I know you're kind of on the co-host seat, but what story did you choose, and why did you choose that story to be put into the book?
I chose the story of Clifford Olson, our local Surrey-based serial killer here, and because it's local to me, and also when I was a young person, a man tried to abduct me and do bad.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Things to me, and it was exactly the time around Clifford Olson's Reign of Terror, so it's a really personal story to me, and I have a lot of emotional investment in it. So that's something that I've always wanted to write about. I've done a couple of episodes on our show about it, but I was so happy when Mitzi contacted me and I could finally get it out of me, kind of thing.
Yeah, and now you're doing some more writing, Mike. So this question will be for both of you. So is it important to put your emotional tie to the story when you write it, or is it important to have that in the story?
Not. It depends on the story, really. If I really do have a connection to it, I'm going to mention it. But if I don't feel, I mean, I'm always going to write it from a human perspective. I'm going to try and figure out how, you know, what the heck made this person want to do these kind of things, and what was the victim feeling at the time. So there's always that human aspect, but not necessarily about me at all.
And what about you, Mitzi?
Well, you know, fortunately, I don't have an experience like that in my life, but there are stories in the Best New True Crime Story serial killers book that are first person. I have a piece written by Danuta Kott, who is a crime writer in the UK, and she tells a story about how living in Sheffield, it was at the time of the Yorkshire Ripper, Peter Sutcliffe, and she has a very creepy anecdote about how she was followed on her way home one evening, and it's very likely that the person who was following her was Peter Sutcliffe, and she managed to you know, get away from him, but then the killings started to happen after that. So, you know, there are first person accounts in here. there's another piece by a Native American writer, Marcy Rendon, who lived in Minneapolis in the mid-80s, and there was a serial killer targeting Native women in her community. And she knew people whose, you know, she knew some of the victims and spoke to people who were there at the time. So there are, obviously, like I said, there's representations of people whose lives were affected personally by these killers, not just people who are writing about them, you know, from the safety of, you know, say myself.
Yeah. Are you happy with how it came out, the whole overall project?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty thrilled with it. I mean, I always want to have my books be as good as they can possibly be, but this exceeded my expectations. And what really, you know, makes me thrilled is the fact that this is my first true crime book. And that it came out this well, and I got so many quality stories and stories that actually have something to say, you know, something that you're going to take away with you and make you think. And that's what I wanted to do. And I think that I achieved that. And so far from the feedback I'm getting, I seem to get people agreeing, and I'm not giving them money to agree with me.
Oh, that's great. No, so did you plan on doing more then? Or are you going to keep this format up, or are you going to jump into something different?
I'm actually working on a new book, The Best New True Crime Stories, Small Towns.
Oh,
so
cool.
It is another anthology. Yeah, it's another anthology, like the serial killers one, but this is going to be true crimes that have happened in small towns, and small towns around the world, not just, you know, what we think of as small towns, such as, you know, in North America, but it'll be international in scope. And again, quality stories, things that'll make you think, things that you may, you know, cases you may be familiar with and some you may never have heard of. So it'll be pretty much along the same lines. So if you like this, I think you'll like that.
I can't wait to read that one.
Good.
Now, do sometimes do you get a story, and maybe you got one for this book?
Mine.
Which, which, no, not, not which totally shocked you. Like it was totally.
By how bad it was, mine.
Yeah, no, totally as in the story itself, as in you get a story and you just can't believe what happened in the story, like you just sort of, it stays with you. Have you had one of those, or did you put one of those in the book?
Well, you know, there's several that are pretty far out there. I mean, the Rat Man is pretty far out there. It's about a serial killer in Japan who is a pedophile and a cannibal and a necrophiliac. And it's a pretty heinous, I mean, serial killers are not, you know, like I said, people that are lovely people is a general rule. But this character is way out there on the spectrum of horrible. So, I mean, that was quite a shocking one. And of course, you know, that had to be dealt with carefully because, I mean, you know, especially you're dealing with children as the victims and, you know, you writers have to sort of be aware of what they're writing and not sensationalize it. And so, yeah, the Rat Man's definitely on the top of the list for that.
Do you feel that there's a rehabilitation option for serial killers, or is it once you're a serial killer, always a serial killer?
Well, you know, there's actually a story in the book that opens that question up. I'll give you my answer first, and then I'll just reference that story. But I just don't think there's rehabilitation. I think there's a line that someone crosses, and you just cannot come back from it. And that's not just for serial killers. You know, there's other things that are in that category. But no, I don't think you can rehabilitate a serial killer. With regard to the story that I mentioned, there's a piece in here called The Quiet Man in the Overalls Struggled to be Heard by Stephen Wade, who's a British writer. And it's about Dennis Nilsen, who was a serial killer in the London area, London, England. And he targeted men. He would, you know, they would come home with him or whatever. And They nicknamed him that he kills for company because he just wanted company, and if people just came over for sex, it's sort of sign their death warrant. But this piece, the writer was a writer in prison, and Nilsson was in his writing class. And he talks quite a bit about does prison work, and would it work for someone like Nilsson, and how Nilsson had even written an autobiography and he wanted to see it published and all of this. So, I mean, there's quite a lot of interesting commentary on that whole issue about serial killers. Can they be, is prison going to work for them? Or are these people just basically wanting to kind of be rock stars in a way, you know, like serial killers? And if they want to write about their crimes and write about their lives, isn't it just they want to see some sort of glorification of what they've done?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is why I won't cover the Luca Magnotta case on my podcast, because he's a notorious narcissist who loves the fact of his name in the media, so I just won't give it to him at all.
Yeah, well, narcissism is mentioned in quite a number of stories about regarding the specific serial killers, that they are narcissists, and you know, there's a piece about let me just look this up really quick. The Man in Black and the Silver Screen: The Life and Crimes of Peter Moore. Peter Moore was a serial killer in Wales, and there's mention in the story, Mark Friars is the writer, there's mention about how in court, you know, Peter Moore was acting like some sort of film star, you know, coming in like, you know, hey, here I am, and even contacting victims' families and completely insane things like that. And it was just, you know, like his little glory. I mean, you know, we've all seen all the footage from Bundy. And you know, you look at him there in the courtroom, and, you know, he's loving it. He's loving it.
Oh,
and
every
then he
moment,
has his groupies are there, too, these insane women who seem to find something about him that, you know. I mean, so, yeah, narcissism's a big part of it.
Almost like a cult figure, in a way, you know, but Charles Manson. Do you think that the death penalty should be in or not?
You know, I'm quite liberal in my views, but I think there are some things the death penalty, you know, I mean, why are we keeping these people around and feeding them and housing them and giving them health care and dental care and TVs and gyms to work out in? There's just a line you cross, and I don't know, why keep them around?
Yeah. Well, actually, I agree, and some of them seem to have so many liberties, you know. It's just crazy. Tex Watson, you know, from the Manson family, has his own website, and it just kind of goes beyond what they should have.
Yeah, Son of Sam is the same.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Jody Arias tweeting people.
Well, we got a lot of people doing tweeting that they shouldn't be doing tweeting, so I won't say anything
I don't know what you're talking about. You people are being mean.
You have no idea.
we got one narcissist that's doing too much. Take away that Twitter. So that's funny, but social media, is that going to change the way our serial killers behave, do you think, in the future? Is this going to incorporate in their behavior?
Well, I mean, are they supposed to even have access to this stuff? I mean, I thought they're not supposed to be allowed to use social media or have Facebook pages or any of this kind of thing.
Oh, in America, you can do anything in America.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Apparently, you know, Clifford Olson, the guy I wrote about, had a MySpace page that people were keeping updated for him. Yeah, that was before Facebook.
People need something productive to do, I think. That is not one of the things.
No.
Well, you know, and sort of what I mean, too, like even the ones that are out that are not caught, like you had Luca Magnotta we talked briefly about, as in he was really big on creating several profile and Facebook fake accounts and liking himself, you know. So do you think it's going to incorporate in the way people actually behave as killers before they get caught? Do you know, are they going to start using it?
I wouldn't be surprised. No, I mean, why not? Yeah. You know, I mean, that's with social media is here and it's not going to go away. So it stands to reason.
We've already seen people live streaming suicide. It's just a matter of time before we have a serial killer doing his thing. The guy in New Zealand, he live streamed his whole murder spree in the.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be the next book you can do is just start doing spree killers and mass shooters, and there's just no end.
No, there isn't. There isn't. I mean, the book I'm currently working on does it will have some of those cases in the piece that I'm writing. I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to give it away, but it is someone who is in that category.
As somebody who comes from a small town, there was a murder in my town back in Nova Scotia very not so recently, probably about 12 years ago now, where a mother murdered her daughter, her 12-year-old daughter, and it ripped the town apart, you know, watching all this happen. It's a very rare thing in such a small place for those things to happen, so it's going to be really interesting to read your next offering for sure.
Well, I think it will. I agree. I mean, that's the thing, because, you know, small towns you just don't think of necessarily as the places where all these things happen, but there's a lot of things going on in small towns. Bad things.
I know. Yeah, I was surprised. Have you seen that one on Skidmore, you know, where they shot the guy in the truck?
Yeah.
He was the bully. You remember that? That was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Since then, there's been several killings in the town.
Oh, wow. And similar way?
No, different ways. And in fact, we're going to have Diane Fanning on next week because there was one of the most crazy murders that happened in Skidmore, and there's been several since. And you're just going to freak out when you hear about what's been going on in that town.
It's going to curl my hair.
I think Mike's heard everything by now.
Just about.
Yes, just about. He's heard a lot. He sits here with me. Well, here we go. Well, this has certainly been interesting. Do you have a website or a place that people can come and contribute stories or say hi to you or how do you offer?
Yeah, of course. I have my website, MitziSoretto.com, and that I also am on Twitter, and I do not tweet superfluously either, and I have a Facebook page, so people can find me at those places, and they could even message me at those places, and obviously I list my writer's calls for submission. I do have that at my website, so there's a tab with that. I've got 2 weeks left for final submissions. If people are interested, they better find out now and start writing.
Oh, boy, get it in there now.
Yeah, because, I mean, I have picked some stories. There's still room, but, we're getting down to the wire. So,
wow. Well, there you go. Get on it, Mike.
I'm writing another
book. Mike's got some other top secret project going on.
Right? Oh, there's nothing top secret about it.
No, I don't.
Yeah. No, it is. It's true. It's top secret.
At some point, we're going to do a book signing here locally as well.
I hope so. If they get it rescheduled, we had with this crazy weather, it was supposed to be this weekend, so that's been postponed. There is going to be a book signing in Seattle on February 1st at Elliott Bay Book Company. Mike unfortunately can't make that, but I will be there, and I'm not sure. There might be a contributor or two if they can manage to get in town. We'll see closer to that date, and hopefully the weather will be favorable.
I really wish I could go, but I've got, there's Fan Expo here, and we've been invited to do a live show there, so.
Okay, I'll forgive you this time, but don't let it happen again.
Okay.
Yeah, he's in demand.
Oh. Yeah, well, hey, you know, you can't fight it.
No, I gotta get him an agent.
This too shall pass, I'm sure. I'm just a fleeting thing.
Your 15 minutes is already down to 14 and a half.
Oh, totally.
I fell asleep during mine, so. Well, I really appreciate it. It's been entertaining, and we're glad that you came on the show. And the book will be on the website, so anybody that is listening can just do one click, pick up the book. And it's the best new true crime stories and serial killers. Mitzi Serretto, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.